Okay. So December the 10th, 1976. Today is the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, Prabhupada, and we are observing a half-day fast. Early in the morning at 6 a.m., Srila Prabhupada called Mahamsa in, along with the other senior men. He preached to them that things must be organized in a proper fashion. Otherwise, he said, everything will be a failure. He told him, I'm not prepared to invest anything here if things continue as they are. You must make immediate plans for irrigation and vegetable and sugarcane crops. The Prabhupada had a scheme for growing foodstuffs there. It was a farm, of course, and he wanted us to be self-sufficient. And he had given Mahamsa previously some loans. So when he came in December, he expected that from the utilization of those loans, there would be some crops growing. But there was nothing. And there was not even an irrigation scheme for getting water out to, you know, the fertile areas. So Prabhupada wasn't very pleased with that. And Mahamsa, in fact, had been asking for more loans. So then Prabhupada took up last night's disaster. And he told him, nobody will come here because we are allowing a sweeper to cook. He was very grave. It has shocked my heart that you can allow a sweeper to cook and then offer such things to Krishna. That means that you must... That means that after 7 years, you are still a Malecha, Yavana. Mahamsa was... He'd been in the movement 7 years. He was from a Parsi family, actually, from Bombay. So the Parsis, of course, are meat eaters. So your consciousness has not changed. We are saying Radhikara Paka Ana Vivija Vyanjana Parama Ananda Krishna Karina Bhojana. Radhika and her gopi friends are personally cooking and making such nice arrangements for giving very palatable foodstuffs for simply for pleasing Krishna. And you are offering things cooked by a sweeper. Mahamsa was apologetic. He told Srila Prabhupada that he was unable to find any devotee that could do the cooking, and thus they had hired the sweeper. In fact, Mahamsa was largely unaware of who was cooking. He had gone to the city to finalize the legal documents for the formation of the new trust before Srila Prabhupada departs, and he had left Achyuta Grudger to organize at the farm. Achyuta Grudger had foolishly engaged the hired sweeper. But Mahamsa was overall in charge, and Prabhupada held him responsible. Prabhupada told him previously, had told Mahamsa previously that you were not all pervasive like Krishna. It was a comment about his management. Everything was dependent on Mahamsa, but Mahamsa was hardly ever to be found because he was so busy doing so many things. So nothing was going on. And Prabhupada had pulled him up about it already and told him, you're not like Krishna, you're not all pervasive. Meaning, delegate, you know, give some responsibility to others. So, yet if he is not personally present, nothing seems to go on properly. He is neither competent to manage everything himself, nor is he competent to train others to manage things properly. With displays like yesterday, Srila Prabhupada is becoming increasingly dissatisfied. Similarly, both Hansadutta and Tejas were present at the lethargic program, but they had also not checked the details of the arrangements. Prabhupada spoke to the small assembly. You are all dead men, he said. Dead men cannot preach. Whatever preaching there is will all be finished. The first principle of preaching is utsahan, enthusiasm. And without this enthusiasm, nothing will go on. So that was in the morning. Then we had the program, very nice program, for Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's appearance day, disappearance day. Prabhupada spoke on the Vyasa Puja poem that he had written in 1936, Adore, adore ye all the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared in Puri, his divine grace. So like that, Prabhupada spoke on the first four slokas of that poem. Very nice. And then in the evening, then again, there was supposed to be the pandal. So Prabhupada was sitting in his room. Gradually some children appeared from the villages. And we heard them chanting outside. They were all gathered in a circle. One of them was chanting. None of our devotees were with them. And one of the kids, he was chanting Hare Krishna, and he was also singing Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya. And all the other kids were responding, and they were all dancing around in a big circle. So Prabhupada liked to see that. So they were dancing with great energy and enthusiasm. And as they were doing that, Prabhupada met with Jagadish Prabhu in his house. So he emphasized again and again the need to provide very nice, palatable prasadam. He told us that this was the crux of his plan to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the area. We shall spend for that. Why miserly? There is no need of miserly. You are going to earn money by agricultural produce, so how will that money be utilized? It will be utilized for Krishna's purpose, by prasadam, by chanting, by drama, but somehow or another, bring them. That is our mission, congregational chanting. Always festival, and we shall spend for that. Immediately arrange. If there's any scarcity of money, I shall pay. But you bring them somehow or another. Tomorrow, I want to see at least 500 men. I came here to see that, not to sit down in a room peacefully. Referring to the upcoming Gita Pratishthan meeting in Wardha, this was a conference Prabhupada was going to go to after leaving Hyderabad. He said, there also we shall inform the meeting that we want to propagate this Krishna consciousness movement town to town, village to village, by attracting them with musical demonstration of Sankirtan, dramatic play, movie, prasadam. Somehow they should become attracted to the temple, to the pandal, and to congregationally chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, hear Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. So for this purpose, whatever expenditure is required, you should collect and spend. This is the scheme of the Hare Krishna movement. For those who are educated, he recommended distribution of literature and scholarly presentations in schools, colleges, libraries and universities. Taking assurance from Jagadish that he had understood his points, Prabhupada repeated the main point again. To attract them to really nice prasadam, palatable food, we shall spend. Where is the difficulty? We shall take contribution from rich persons, or we shall earn ourselves, and we shall spend it to give them very nice prasadam. As people come to join us, he said, they could be engaged in growing their own food, making their own houses, and making their own cloth. As soon as they understand, then they will be glad to do it, and they will stop all this nonsense of illicit sex and meat eating. Then their life will be purified, and they will make more and more advancement on this path. That is perfection, and that is our mission. Prabhupada pointed out that people travel miles to get a good meal from a restaurant or a hotel. And we cannot give them nice Krishna prasadam, he asked. Why? Why you cannot give? Arrange like that, first class. Simply for eating they will come. So you immediately do it. When Jagadish asked what sort of prasadam we should give, Prabhupada told him, give them nice prasadam by which they are attracted. It doesn't matter, khichdi, puri, kachori, ladu, whatever they are attracted, then you give. So we must give Krishna prasadam. Don't waste. Give them nice palatable foodstuffs. Give them one finest kachori, one nice samosa, two puri. Oh, they will be very glad. So make very, very nice prasadam. He was still agitated by last night's fiasco. What is this rubbish that the dog cannot eat even? They have done a great mistake. All rascals. I am very angry. I say that if you have got no money, I will spend. I will give you money. So why you should make such 10th class and no food at all? It has to be thrown away. Simply waste of grains and energy. Engage nice professional cook. Prepare nice foodstuffs. I shall spend for that if you have no money. Gentlemen who are coming should immediately be offered some prasadam. Please come here, take puri, kachori, samosa. The poor arrangement for the pandal was not the only incident of bad management that Prabhupada referred to. He also cited a disturbing incident several days ago when Dr. Sinha Ghosh had come to massage him. So this man, Dr. Sinha Ghosh, he had like a health resort at Kodai Canal, which was in the south there, in the mountains. And he was actually quite prominent. He had treated the Nehru family. He was a physiotherapist. Older man, I guess he was about 60 at that time. And he had this special technique for doing massage. So he had come to see Prabhupada. He'd had some contact with the devotees through Mahamsa, became attracted, and he'd come to see Prabhupada in August when we opened the city temple. And he saw Prabhupada was quite sick, so he offered to give him some treatment. So when we came to the farm in December, then he came every day for about 5 or 6 days, because he was a very busy man. But he came and he gave Prabhupada this special massage. And his technique was that as he massaged, he vibrated his hands. He claimed he was vibrating at like 40 or 50 vibrations a second or something. I don't know how he was counting. But at least, you know, as he was massaging, it would vibrate. And he did Prabhupada's whole massage like that. And he was using hot towels on his joints as well. And Prabhupada liked it very much. And in fact, at one point he told me that I should learn how to do it like that. At the time, when I was watching, I was thinking, you know, it's more shell bottle than anything else. But Prabhupada liked it. Anyway, so when Dr. Ghosh had finished, he had to go off some other city. So the next day I decided to try this technique. And I did the whole massage kind of vibrating. Prabhupada didn't say anything. But at the end of the massage, I was completely exhausted. It was like every bit of energy that I had in me had just drained out of me. But Srila Prabhupada, just when he stood up, he practically sprang to his feet. I was surprised. He just kind of sprang up and he was smiling like anything. And it was almost like my energy had gone into Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, the next day when it came to do the massage again, I was so exhausted I couldn't do it. So I just went back to doing my regular massage. And Prabhupada didn't say anything. He didn't say, oh, why don't you do, you know, like you did yesterday. He made no comment whatsoever. And he seemed happy enough just to get his regular massage again. So that was it. I just did it that one day. Anyway, Dr. Ghosh was a very nice man. And whilst we were there, he was visiting at the farm. He brought his son, Prasanath or something. And the boy shaved up. And he actually took initiation from Srila Prabhupada whilst we were there. So it was very nice. And whenever he finished the massage, Dr. Ghosh would finish up with Prabhupada's feet. And then he would bow down and he would take Prabhupada's feet and put them on his head. And he'd say, now I can die. Like that. So he was very nice. Anyway, so Prabhupada now was referring to when Dr. Ghosh had come. So he said, the doctor came. He comes out of love, but there is no prasadam. What is this? The doctor came, but we couldn't supply him prasadam at 12 o'clock. So he'd missed his breakfast so he could come and massage Prabhupada. And then when he asked if there was a little something he could get, there was no prasadam, even at 12 o'clock in the day. So Prabhupada was very unhappy with the whole arrangement. Prabhupada reiterated the standard that he had told the managers in Vrindavan to maintain. Prasadam, as soon as they want, then they must feed some prasadam according to the position of the person. We shall spend for that. I'm not hesitating to spend money, so why the arrangement is lacking? Immediately arrange for theirs and invite them. Don't make it childish. I want to see tomorrow many thousand people. If you cannot make attractive, then why will they come? And then it is a failure. So you make it attractive. Whatever money is required, I shall pay. Simple theory will not help. Make such prasadam as people will come and be mad after it. He asked for his other leaders, who were still engaged in the kirtan outside, asking Jagadish whether he had written everything down so that he could repeat it to the others. Jagadish assured him that it was on tape, and then he went off to bring the other leaders in. The chanting stopped, and Mahamsa Swami entered with several other men. Prabhupada spoke with him frankly and firmly, again stressing the same points. He asked Mahamsa if he was satisfied with the turnout this evening. Mahamsa admitted that he was not. Then, Prabhupada said, pointedly, Mahamsa again excused the poor arrangements. No, well, the people also, there was no advertisement that today there would be a program. So, whatever it is required, you do it, Prabhupada told him. Give them very, very first-class prasadam. They will come for the tongue. Mahamsa nodded in agreement. He told Prabhupada that the local villagers liked their food very spicy. Whatever they like, I don't know what they like, Prabhupada replied, but you prepare and then they should come and eat. Whatever it may be, whatever they like, the villagers, then you prepare that. If you have no money, I shall pay you money. But you attract them. They will come here to eat. Oh, very nice thing. So that is wanted. He told us that the whole beginning of his creation of ISKCON was on the basis of prasadam. I made this movement successful simply by this love feast. They did not come to hear the Hare Krishna. They came for the love feast. From the very beginning, when I was in that 26th Second Avenue, every Sunday I was giving nice foodstuff, at least 200 men. He relaxed a bit and he reminisced about his early followers. Daily, at least more than 15 or 20 men. And I was cooking myself. And that was the beginning of my movement. The chapatis with Kirtananda, first of all he was taking one or two, then 12. As we all laughed, Prabhupada's slight frame shook with mirth as he recalled a story that he's particularly fond of. There was another boy, Stridish, 22 chapatis. Stridish, can I give you? Yes. I gave him 4. Finished. Stridish, can I give you? Yes. Prabhupada laughed in fond remembrance. Very nice boy. He was eating 22 chapatis. One day there was no money, so he immediately went, and he came back after some time with some money. And where did you go? Oh, to the shoe booth. So he was polishing shoes, and then he brought some money. In the airports, you see, they have these stands where the people sit and they get their shoes polished. So Stridish, there was no money one day, so he disappeared. And then he came back later with some money. And Prabhupada asked him, where have you been? He said, I was at the shoe booth doing polishing people's shoes. He got some money and then brought it back. So Prabhupada laughed again and he told us that this was how his movement had developed. Repeatedly, he told Mahamsa that providing palatable prasadam was the primary concern. Telling him to hire a first-class cook and assuring him of sufficient money, he said, So long I am living, I will go on paying. You don't be miserly. Bring the devotees for eating, and then chanting, and then cinema, and then lecture, and in this way you have to develop. Not that people will come, oh, Hare Krishna mantra is there, let us go away. They will not come. What do they know about Hare Krishna? They will come, oh, there is nice, good prasadam. So Mahamsa, as compliant as ever, ventured to mention last night's failure, somehow not quite grasping the reality. Oh, well, some people I know, they said that yesterday the prasadam wasn't nice, and there was Prabhupada's blunt but controlled retort cut him off. Not nice? It is not eatable even by a dog. But you are less than the dogs if you prepare such things. I was surprised. You allowed a sweeper to cook. I was surprised. We have distribution of prasadam, not dog's food. Such rascals are here. You do not know. I do not wish to discuss any more on this point. You have murdered the whole thing in 2 days. Now, if possible, bring them first-class prasadam. Very palatable. Foodstuff means even one has no appetite, he will eat it. That is food. Not that even if one has got appetite, oh, then he'll forget. That is not food. He told him to grow crops like sugarcane and rice to make money for the programs. Mahamsa has spent a lot of money so far, but for no return. And Prabhupada told him to manage like a businessman. He invests money, he gets return. Spend it for Krishna. That is wanted. There is no question of becoming a miser. I never did it. When I got that farthing, then I wanted to spend it. Immediately spend. And how have I made this BBT? Immediately, 50% for printing and 50% for this. easing off a bit, Prabhupada told him, "So, whatever is done is done. Now, do it very nicely. I want to see at least 1,000 men coming from the villages." So, that's how not to entertain your guests. But you can see the emphasis that Prabhupada put on good first-class prasadam. Just attract them. Whatever they like, whatever kind of foodstuffs they like, cook it, offer it to Krishna, and attract people to come. Because he had seen, just like in America, they have restaurants and people travel miles just to go and eat at a nice restaurant. So he said it should be like that. The prasadam should be so nice that the news will go out and people will travel from many miles just to come and eat at our restaurants. So he was very keen for that. Unfortunately, even after all of this, by another 2-3 months, the whole program was finished. The managers there at that time, Mahamsa, Hansaduta, and Tejas, somehow or another couldn't agree with each other. And as a result, the whole program was a failure. By just 3 weeks, actually, later, Mahamsa turned up in Bombay. This was in early January, 77. And Prabhupada asked him about the program, and it had already stopped. So Prabhupada gave so much emphasis they couldn't do it. Because that, somehow or another, that Hyderabad project seemed to be doomed right from the very beginning. It never really took off. And then immediately after Prabhupada's disappearance, then there was so much disagreement between the Bhadruka family and our devotees, and then the whole thing was finished. So, unfortunate. But anyway, that's the standard. First-class prasadam, so nice that even if you're not hungry, you'll want to eat it. So now, I had a practical experience also about failing to provide prasadam. When Prabhupada had gone to London in July of 76, then one of the visitors that came was my family, my father and mother and brother, etc. I had left England in 1971. I got a passage from England to Australia. It was what they used to call the £10 passage scheme. For £10, you could go from England to Australia, and the Australian government would actually pay for the fare, and you could go there, and then if you stayed for 2 years, then you were free to do whatever you liked. If you left Australia before 2 years, then you had to pay the government the balance of the fare to bring you out, plus of course you had to pay your own way out again. So I had left England in 1971, and that was, I met the devotees immediately we landed in Sydney. And I joined the temple in early 72. So my family, when they found out that I'd become a devotee, then they, you know, got in extreme anxiety. And they were writing letters and saying, "We're going to get the police to come and rescue you," and like this. And it became quite acrimonious at one point. They were writing letters and criticizing so many things because they'd never met the devotees. And I was writing letters back and I was preaching to them, you know. It's a classic mistake that new devotees make generally. They write to their parents and say, "Actually, you're not really my parents. We're not this body. And we're all spirit souls." And like that. So that kind of exchange was going on. And then finally it got to a point where I told them, "Look, if you write anything more blasphemous about the devotees, you'll never hear from me again." So then they wrote back and said, "All right, we won't say anything." But, and then I agreed I won't preach to them. So we just kept things, you know, "How's the weather? You know, how are you doing?" Like that. So in 1976, I became Prabhupada's servant and I was returning to England for the first time since I'd left. So they all came to the manor. It was a little unfortunate because Prabhupada had been very sick, and then on that, the day that they came, it was a Sunday, and Srila Prabhupada had gone from the manor into London, into the city there, and he did a couple of programs. First of all, actually, we went to the present London Temple, that's Soho Street. At that time, it was an ex-public house drinking, and it was up for sale. So the devotees took Prabhupada to see it. He looked at it from the outside, and he said, yes, buy it. So they went ahead and purchased it. Then, from there, we went to Bury Place, which was the first temple that we had in London. Prabhupada went to see Sri Sri Radha Londoneshwara. In fact, the only reason he went into London was just to go and see those deities. And on the way in, I asked Prabhupada, is Radha Londoneshwara your favorite deities? And Prabhupada said, yes. So he went to see the deities. He gave a class. Then he had breakfast. He had a little break, a little rest. And then there was one Indian devotee, Shiradakshayi Vishnu. He was an older businessman, but he had met the devotees in about 69, very early on when they were beginning in London. And he met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada told him, you just go on with your work, but you make your home into a temple. And he did that, literally. He actually turned his home. It was just like a little suburban house. It was in like a row of houses. And he invited Prabhupada to come and do a program there that afternoon. And when we went there, his whole house was literally a temple. His living room, you know, he had deities, and he used to invite his neighbors to come, and he had a full program every single day. So it was nice. Prabhupada liked that. Anyway, in the afternoon, he was feeling a little tired. He took prasadam there. And he was feeling a little tired, so he took rest. So I had to take permission to go back to Bhaktivedanta Manor because my parents were arriving. So I went back, and they came. And I spent a couple of hours. I showed them around Bhaktivedanta Manor, and I showed them the deities. I remember my mother especially liked seeing the deities. She liked all the, you know, flowers and clothing and all that kind of stuff. I even sold them a bag of a Gita. So they were quite happy. But about halfway through the visit, I thought, now, you know, it's 4 or 5 o'clock. The devotees must be serving the Sunday feast out. Then all the other temples that I'd been to, they had the Sunday feast beginning at 4 o'clock. So I waited until that, and then I went to find them some prasadam. And then the devotees told me, oh no, we don't, you know, here in London, we have our feast at 12 o'clock. There's no prasadam. So I was really disappointed. I couldn't give them any prasadam. So anyway, at about 5:30, then they had to leave because they had a 4-hour drive to get back to their home. And just as we were saying goodbye outside the front gate, then Srila Prabhupada came back from London in this Rolls Royce that had been loaned to him. And as he came in through the gate, we saw him. There was a kirtan party. So I went running in, you know, after the car there. And my parents were kind of standing there bewildered, you know, who's this? What's going on? I think they got a glimpse of Prabhupada. I wanted to take them up and, you know, meet him personally. But they, you know, they had this long drive back. It was very late. And Prabhupada was just coming back from, you know, 2 or 3 programs in London, and he was, you know, quite sick. So I was a little unsure about whether to kind of impose on him. So unfortunately, I missed the opportunity. I didn't take them in. Anyway, so I saw them off. And then after that, then I went up into Prabhupada's rooms. So then immediately Prabhupada asked me, how did it go with your parents? So I said, well, they were very happy. You know, they could see that Krishna consciousness is a very nice thing. They liked the fact that, you know, my character had been transformed. And so, you know, they generally liked everything. And then Prabhupada immediately, he asked, so, they took prasadam? It's the first thing he asked. And my face fell, and I had to admit that they had not. And then Prabhupada's just got this instant look of disappointment. And he just said, oh, like this, as if to say, well, then what was the use of inviting them? So that was my own personal experience, not, you know, arranging for prasad. And Prabhupada was really disappointed. Anyway, later on, they came again. I went there in 78. and invited them, and I was very careful. I remembered that. I was very careful to lay on a very big feast just for them, and they were really happy. But anyway, that was, you know, Prabhupada's standard. There must be prasadam. Anybody comes, any visitor, then there must be prasadam. Otherwise, practically, your preaching is, a failure. Does anybody have any questions at this point? Or comments? Yeah. Yeah, what was that about order?
Anything Prabhupada directed that first water should be served or first rice should be there?
No, I mean, there's different standards according to where you are, at least in India. You know, different regions have different prasadam. And if you go to Bengal, then you always eat the bitter first. But if you go to Gujarat, generally, they like to eat the sweets first. So, you know, you eat according to the place where you are. Prabhupada generally, of course, he was brought up in Bengal, so he liked the Bengali style. He liked very bitter things. That was something that, you know, was new to me when I joined Prabhupada's party. Naturally, we were getting Prabhupada's remnants. And, you know, there was this bitter melon and other things there, shukta sometimes and like that. And to me, I'd never eaten bitter things. I had no idea that, you know, it was nice to eat something bitter. And I mentioned that to Prabhupada and he just laughed. Yeah. Later on, of course, then I developed a taste for that. But anyway, you know, you serve according to people's natural tastes, as he mentioned there. Whatever they like, give them that. If they like it very spicy, give them it spicy, that's all. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, Mataji, you had a question? So the question is that when you're doing personal service to your spiritual master, how do you avoid becoming familiar and then, of course, committing offenses? And there is, because there's an old saying, familiarity breeds contempt. That, once the newness of something is worn off, you get familiar with it, then the tendency is then to, become inattentive or even disregard, certain things about it. It's a danger. And it was a fact that sometimes some of, the devotees that had the chance to serve Srila Prabhupada fell into that trap. That's, the third offense. To think about the spiritual master as being an ordinary man. Yeah, because you live in close proximity, then after some time, you start thinking, oh, it's just like anybody else. And if you start that mentality, then you fall then from your spiritual life. Prabhupada mentions in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the personal servants of the deity and the spiritual master have to be very, very careful. Because you're given an opportunity for making very rapid advancement by rendering that personal service. But if you misuse it, if you don't do it nicely, then you can also make very rapid offenses. It's like living in Vrindavan. Whatever service that you do in Vrindavan, you get 1,000 times the benefit that, the same service would yield somewhere else. But if you make offenses in Vrindavan, you get 1,000 times the reactions too. So it works both ways. So at least personally, one of the first things that I realized when I was serving Prabhupada was that it was inevitable I was going to make offenses. You know, we're not perfect pure devotees. We're conditioned souls and we're learning how to render devotional service. So it's inevitable that we're going to make mistakes and we're going to make offenses. So what to do about that? Then I thought, well, I have a choice now. If I serve Prabhupada, I'm going to make offenses and then I'll get reactions. On the other hand, if out of fear of making some offenses, then I don't do the service, yeah, then I'll lose this priceless opportunity, you know, to do something very special and pleasing for Srila Prabhupada. So then, what, you know, it's like a conundrum. but the way that I resolved that was that I just accepted, okay, I will make mistakes, I will sometimes create offenses, but by being very humble and learning from those, you know, mistakes, then that will please Srila Prabhupada. And that was my experience. Like the second day that I massaged him, then during the massage you had to stop halfway through. And in India, you know, in those days you didn't always get like hot water on tap. Like in the West, it's just automatically there. But in India, in a lot of the houses, it wasn't. So what we had to do was, you get these immersion heaters, you know, these metal thing, rods, and you stick them in the bucket of water and switch it on, and then after 20 minutes you get hot water. And Prabhupada liked to bathe from buckets. He never bathed from showers. He always bathed from a bucket. That was his habit. And what he would do was mix some hot water with some cold water and get it just to the right temperature to wash off the oil off his body. So the second day that I massaged Prabhupada, what I was supposed to have done was about halfway through the massage, you know, put the heater in the water and switch it on, and then at the end of the massage there'd be hot water, and then carry it down into Prabhupada's bathroom. But I forgot. I was concentrating so hard on trying to do a good job with the massage, I completely forgot about the water. So at the end of it, then Prabhupada stood up and then he said, so? Meaning, you know, get the water and let's go to the bathroom. And then I realized, no hot water, I forgot all about it. So I had to apologize. And I said, Prabhupada, I forgot. So Prabhupada was, you know, naturally disappointed and mildly annoyed. But because I was new, he didn't say anything. He just kind of excused it. So, but he had to wait. You had to stand around for 20 minutes until he, you know, the hot water was ready. So then, a couple of days later, you know, I got everything ready. I put the bucket there. I put the thing in the bucket. And then I was thinking, now, you know, halfway, you know, I have to stop and switch. All I have to do is just switch it on. And again, I forgot. So that was the second time in 4 days. And the second time, Prabhupada got really annoyed with me. You know, he really chastised me for being careless and not for learning my lesson from the first time round. So I understood the only way that you can avoid offenses is just to be very humble. If you make an offense, and you make a mistake, admit it and learn from it and don't do it again. And that humility protects you from the reactions. Yeah, but if you get chastised by your spiritual master and then you start to think actually he's wrong. Why did he chastise me like that? It wasn't so bad, you know. And that happened actually. There was one secretary of Prabhupada's that when I was with Prabhupada, there was some managerial thing going on in the society. He took it upon himself to take a certain line of action. And then he came and informed Prabhupada what he'd done. And Prabhupada was so angry with him, he was yelling at him. He was really, really angry. I mean, he yelled at him so loudly. I was in the room next door. I jumped up. I thought something was going on. I ran in the room. And Prabhupada was, you know, blasting his secretary for having done something without first asking him. Now, later on, that man left the movement. Just a few months later, actually, he gave up his service and he left. So that was in 76. Then in 1994, so what's that, 18 years later, I had a conversation with him, And we were talking, you know, about the service that we'd done with Srila Prabhupada. And then he revealed to me, and I don't think he'd ever spoken about this with anybody before this, he revealed to me that when Prabhupada had blasted him that one time, he said it cracked him. He actually started to think that Prabhupada was being unreasonable. That, you know, he had done his best, alright, he made a mistake, but why did Prabhupada shout at him so, you know, heavily, so loudly? And why did he chastise him so strongly? And he actually, you know, he said that was like a crack in his heart. And it just, you know, somehow or another then, you know, made him have a doubt about Srila Prabhupada. He said, I don't doubt him as a, you know, pure devotee. I don't doubt, you know, the spiritual teachings. But I think that, you know, he could have been more reasonable sometimes. Sometimes he was just too heavy in the way that he dealt with us. So I said, okay, well, let's talk about that. So, you know, we had about an hour's discussion about it. And, I knew at the time when it had happened, he had not been chanting his rounds, actually, for quite a long time. He was at most doing about 2 rounds a day. And I told him, I said, you know, it's not a problem with Srila Prabhupada, it was a problem with you. I said, first of all, you did something without asking Srila Prabhupada, and then you came to him and told him afterwards. I said, he had every right to chastise you, he's your spiritual master. And Prabhupada's chastisement is for your good. You know, it's not some mundane thing coming from his false ego. I said, but because you weren't chanting Hare Krishna, you took it with your false ego. Because you weren't purifying yourself every day by chanting. So you were working on the level of your own mind and intelligence, and so you thought that Prabhupada was wrong when he chastised you, but you were wrong. So we had a long talk about it. So then about 3 years later, the same man, he turned up in Mayapur. By that time I'd moved to Mayapur, this was in 97. And he came to Mayapur, and I saw him there, he came over, he was really happy and friendly. And we had a chat, and he told me, he said, you know, I'm really, you know, grateful that we had that talk. He said, because now, he said, you'll be happy to know that I've resolved that problem that I had, you know, in my relationship with Srila Prabhupada, and I fully accept now that I was wrong, and Prabhupada, you know, was perfectly right in what he did. He said, now I feel completely relieved. But he had been carrying that with him for about 18 years. Until we talked about it. So, a small thing. But because he wasn't actually following properly. Then when Prabhupada dealt with him, you know, in this very strong way, which the spiritual master has a prerogative to do that. He can praise you or he can chastise you as he likes. Because he's on the pure platform, the effect will be the same. You will become more Krishna conscious. Of course, Prabhupada did tell me, in Calcutta in 1977, he said that unless someone is actually advanced, you can't chastise them because then they'll crack. So you have to deal with them very carefully. So anyway, he was Prabhupada's secretary, he was a GBC, he was a sannyasi, but somehow or another he wasn't following, he wasn't chanting his rounds properly every day, and therefore he was working off his intellectual platform rather than the spiritual. And he started to see Srila Prabhupada in a mundane way. And because of that, he fell down. So, you have to be careful. When you're dealing with a pure devotee, or any devotee, you have to be careful. You know, that even somebody who's not on the pure platform, sometimes they may make a mistake, but when you're associating with devotees, then you're associating with those persons who have Krishna's favor. Krishna looks kindly upon his devotees. So if we unnecessarily criticize them or commit offenses to them, then we're going to get a reaction. So we, you know, we're an exalted company, actually, with any devotees. And what to speak about, you know, personality like Srila Prabhupada. So be careful. But that your defense is humility, that's all. If you're actually humble, then Krishna and his devotees are always willing to forgive. But if you're not humble, then you'll take offense and think, oh, you know, I've been offended. Then what can be done? All right? Does that answer your question? Yeah. Yes, Prabhu. I have heard something like that. I don't know who was involved in that. That, yeah, Prabhupada was given something and when he tasted it, he asked about the person and said that he wasn't following the principles. There was one practical experience that I had in 1976 when Prabhupada had just arrived in Mayapur and the devotees had hired a cook to come, you know, for the Mayapur festival, to cook for the festival. And Prabhupada was going around the grounds and he saw this man and he didn't know that he was the cook. He had no idea who he was, but he looked at him and he said, "Who is that?" He said, "He is a demon." Like that. He said, and then they said, "Oh, he's the cook." Prabhupada said, "Sack him immediately." And then it turned out that, you know, the few times that he had cooked, the devotees were all complaining. There was something about his food that, you know, it wasn't very palatable. And Prabhupada, just by looking at him, he said, "He's a demon." And there was another occasion when we were in Hyderabad. The Prabhupada had asked, when we were at the city temple, they were distributing prasadam, I think on the Sunday feast. And then Prabhupada had asked, you know, for some sample. And then when he tasted the prasadam, he immediately said, "Who has cooked this?" So then it turned out that it was a rickshaw walla. That Mahamsa had, you know, he'd come along and Mahamsa had, you know, kind of shown him a bit of mercy. And then the man gradually had been engaged in cooking. And Mahamsa admitted that he wasn't, you know, that good of a cook, but he said, "He's an honest man. That's why I'm keeping him, because he's an honest man." Prabhupada said, "He's not honest." He said, "He says he's a cook, but this is not fit to eat." He said, "He's not honest." He said, "Sack him." So he made him immediately sack him. He was a rickshaw waller. He wasn't a cook. But Prabhupada could tell just, you know, by eating the prasadam, he knew there was something wrong here. So, yeah, sometimes things like that happened. Any other questions? You have a very soft voice and I'm going deaf. You have to speak up a little. So you're saying what happens when, so like you visit a life member's house or something and they have a hired cook? Oh, the devotees have hired cooks. Well, even at the temples, Prabhupada said sometimes, as he said with Mahamsa, he said, "Go and hire a professional cook." But most of the professional cooks are brahmanas. Or you get a Mawari cook, they have a very high standard. So if you can find a cook, just like in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was personally interviewing, you know, candidates for being the cook in the restaurant in the Vrindavan temple. And he interviewed two or three different men until he found one that could cook nicely. But, you know, they were all brahmanas. So if they actually, you know, following some kind of standard, then, you know, it's okay. Of course, it's better if you cook yourself, but if you can't always do that, what can be done? So Prabhupada wasn't necessarily against having a hired cook, you know, as long as the person was qualified. In fact, when we were at the Hyderabad farm, we had been invited to go to the house of Mr. Bogilal Patel. He was a very big man, very rich. He had a lot of land holdings and things. Very, very nice man, very pious. And he liked Prabhupada a lot, so he invited us to go to his home. And when we went there, you know, he had a hired cook, but Prabhupada ate like two or three times the amount that he normally ate. And at the end of it, he told us, he said, this, you know, this man is first class, this cook. He said, much better than, he asked Bogulal, he said, how much are you paying him? So he said, oh, 190 rupees a month. And then Prabhupada turned to our managers, he said, just see him, we're paying 200 rupees a month and getting something that's only half as good. So, Prabhupada, you know, he appreciated if the person was expert, if they were qualified. Alright? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. Well, if you read this volume of Transcendental Diary, I narrate an incident there where we went to Prabhupada and asked him about chocolate. And you can get the reply from that.
The color is chocolate.
The color is chocolate. All right. There was an incident. It came up when we were in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada answered it very clearly.
Yeah, you must read it in the book.
Yes.
There's probably a guideline about, say, like, play that you will have where we just come any odd time, even sometimes late in the evening, 8, 9, 10 o'clock.
Some so guidelines about what, sorry? Yeah, well, the very last item on this seminar on prasadam is a letter from Prabhupada to all the temple presidents. And it was written, it was dictated on the train from Allahabad to Calcutta in mid-January 1977. Prabhupada had been at the Kumbh Mela. Ramaswari was his secretary. And we left there maybe about the 18th or 17th of January to Calcutta. In the middle of the night, Prabhupada dictated this letter because at the Kumbh Mela, the devotees had failed to get sufficient food stock so that we could have mass prasadam distribution. Prabhupada was really, really disturbed by that. That, you know, there were millions of people and we were unable to distribute prasadam even because of bad management. And so he dictated this letter to every temple president. And the whole thing was that there must always be at every moment in the temple enough prasadam to immediately feed at least 10 or 20 men. So that anybody comes, you can immediately give them prasadam. And then if people come, then you immediately cook more. So that there's always enough stock to feed at least 10 or 20 people as soon as they come. And then in the evening, he said, if that stock is not used up, then you can distribute that to the devotees, so there's no loss. And then he said that Radharani is the manager of the temple. You cannot say, oh, we don't have enough money, we can't afford it, there's not enough stock, we have no manpower, etc. He said, that means that you don't have any faith in Krishna. So Radharani is managing the temple. She's the goddess of fortune. She can supply unlimitedly. So that was, yeah, Prabhupada was very clear that every temple you must always have prasadam on hand to be able to feed anybody at any time, whenever they come. Is that your question?
Does that mean something related to the house of the devotee that they could also have something to talk and the visitors are
Well, that's, you know, up to you. As householders, you have to make what arrangements that you can to be as Krishna conscious as you can. The standard Prabhupada said is in the temples. Now, if for some reason or another you can't always come to the temple, then at your home you do your puja. So you should try to keep the same standard as much as you can. It's a little difficult, but that's the, you know, that's the standard. So similarly with prasadam, you should always at least have something. yeah, to offer. Just like when Srila Prabhupada was at 26 Second Avenue. He had no money. When he rented that place for the first month, every penny that he had, every cent that he had to put down as the deposit. And he said, when I went in there, I had no idea whether I would have the money for the next month's rent. But he immediately started his program. And at the end of every program, he would take an apple and he would cut it up with a knife. And then he would pass around the slices of apple so that everybody got a slice of apple. That was all he was able to do at that point. So that was an apple. But then as we heard just now, you know, within a very short period, he was feeding 15 or 20 men a day and 200 on a Sunday. And he was personally cooking everything. So you have to do whatever's within your means. That's up to you. Yes, Prabhu.
Did you ever see Prabhupada cook?
Did I ever see Prabhupada cook? I not only saw him cook, I ate what he cooked. And I can tell you to this day, I had never tasted anything like it. There was no meal I've had before or since that tasted quite like what Prabhupada cooked himself personally. He, when we were in Bombay in April of 76, we were preparing to go on what turned out to be the last world tour. So Prabhupada, up until that point, I had not been cooking. And I wasn't a cook. I didn't know how to cook. And Pradyumna was just going to come on the party as well. So Prabhupada, 2 days running, he had this little cooker, pressure cooker thing that you can buy in Vrindavan. There's like 3 sections. And you put dal in the bottom, put rice in the middle, and chopped up vegetables in the top, and then the steam from the dal, as it cooks, it goes up through holes in the two upper chambers and steams the rice and steams the vegetables. Then when it's finished, then you break it open, the dal, you put a chance, the rice is already cooked, and then the vegetables, then you spice up in different ways. So Prabhupada was showing us how to cook with that cooker. And he did it very expertly. I mean, he's really fast. And he had it all finished like in half an hour. And then he ate. And then myself and Pradyumna, we ate what was left over. And it was really just like nectar. It was fantastic. Simple, but it was so nice. So yeah, I did see Prabhupada cook a couple of times. Unfortunately, I was too dull to learn. But that's coming up in maybe tonight. So we'll be talking some more tonight from 7:30 till about 9. And then again tomorrow in the morning and again in the evening. I'm not sure whether there's going to be an afternoon session as well. If anybody wants to get any of the books, there's 5 volumes. All of these narrations are from Transcendental Diary, which was the diary that I was keeping when I was traveling with Prabhupada. So if you're interested, we have some stock of the books. I've got all 5 volumes. The 5th volume just came out about a year ago, and I'm working on volume 6 right now. So if anybody wants to get any of those, you can see myself. I have softbounds and hardbound versions. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.